Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, October 25th, 2022 meeting for the Rio Grande City Council. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Storton.
Here.
Councilmember Paulding.
Here.
Councilmember Barnage.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem George.
Here.
Mayor Bay Russum.
Here. Would you please silently join me in a moment of reflection? Thank you. And since we have no community members here for the flag salute, would you please join me and stand if you can?
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Under agenda review, does anyone have any need to change the agenda order this evening? Okay, seeing no one, we have no closed session announcements. I will move that all ordinances presented at the meeting shall be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we get roll call, please?
Mayor Bay Russum.
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage.
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding.
Yes.
Councilmember Storton.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem George.
Yes.
All right, that takes us to special presentations. This is the fun part of our meeting here. Item 6A is the mayor's commendation, recognizing the Arroyo Grande Valley Kiwanis Club. So if you would like to meet me at the podium, we'll have Ms. Ann McCracken.
Come on,
guys.
I'm not doing this by myself. We have a little surprise for you. Nice. I think you may already know about this. Let me come over here. How do I
present? Right here, okay. If you would. Now, I'll read the commendation, and then...
These are all committee members.
I'll read the commendation, and then you can tell us about stuff, and you can present that to the council. Thank you. All right, so this is a mayor's commendation presented to the Arroyo Grande Valley Kiwanis Club in recognition of your involvement and efforts put forth in the nationally accredited inclusive playground project at Elm Street Park, which resulted in receiving the Service Award of Excellence and Champion of the Community from the California Parks and Recreation Society. The city gratefully acknowledges and appreciates your dedication in providing projects, programs, and activities that have benefited the city of Arroyo Grande. Thank you so much.
What's going on our Facebook page?
Thank you. And then do you want a copy of this? Do you want the council to receive? How do you want to do that?
We would like a copy of it. Through me is fine.
Okay. Do you want to take a picture with that check?
Sure.
Okay. And maybe Sheridan, you want to come up for that?
Yes, Sheridan. And Jared.
Jared.
Okay.
Let's put Jared
over.
So why don't we
good place to stand?
Yeah. Why don't we go to Jared?
Yeah. Let's go to Jared.
Oh, there we go.
They're gonna try to get to Jared because he can't stand.
Okay, seven. Testing 1, 2.
7 years ago, you know, we came here and it was a different group of people, but you were all here. I think there's only a couple people that weren't. And then throughout the last 7 years, I would show up with the banners and we'd have some club members and we would, you know, sort of. And then anyway, I just want to thank you for all your support over the last 7 years. Everything that Sheridan has said is true, and everything about you is so awesome, because what stuck in my head, the meeting we brought the program originally, was you realize you're going to turn this over after it's built to the city, but you realize you're responsible for making it happen. And we took it on, you know, and Arroyo Grande is not a giant city, and the Kiwanis Club has never been known for the big dollars. So I want to thank you so much for making it happen, because it was all we could do to get $21,000, and we're still working on more. We hope we can give you more. But thank you, thank you, thank you on behalf of all the children and their parents and their grandparents and children of all abilities. You're the man. Thank you, guys.
And let's go ahead and open up public comment. So if anyone would like to comment on item 6A, this is the mayor's commendation for the Kiwanis Club. Would anyone like to come forward?
What'd you say?
And anyone online like to come forward on this item?
If any member of the public on Zoom would like to speak on this item, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. And I'll just put an exclamation point on that and say that that was a great partnership between the Kiwanis Club and Parks and Rec and our staff. And thank you for all the hard work that was done to make that happen. Item 6B is honorary proclamation recognizing November 2022 as Family Court Awareness Month. And I believe we have Tracy Mueller Gibbs virtually. AGP, can we put her into the presentation level? There you are. Hi, welcome. All right.
Thank you.
I'll go ahead and read the proclamation. This is an honorary proclamation recognizing November 2022 as Family Court Awareness Month. Whereas the mission of the Family Court Awareness Month Committee, or FCAMC, is to increase awareness of the importance of a family court system that prioritizes child safety and acts in the best interest of children. And whereas the mission of the FCAMC is fueled by the desire to create awareness and change in the family court system for the estimated 58,000 children a year who are ordered into unsupervised contact with abusive parents, and honoring the hundreds of children who have been reported as murdered during visitation with a dangerous parent. And whereas the FCAMC strives to increase awareness on the importance of empirically based education and training on domestic violence and child abuse, including emotional, psychological, physical, and sexual abuse, as well as childhood trauma, coercive control, and post-separation abuse for judges and all professionals working on cases within the family court system. And whereas the FCAMC strives to increase awareness on the importance of using scientifically valid, evidence-based treatment programs and services that are proven in terms of safety, effectiveness, and therapeutic value. And whereas the FCAMC strives to educate judges and other family court professionals on evidence-based, peer-reviewed research. Such research is a critical component to making decisions that are truly in the best interest of children. This research includes the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, Child Custody Evaluators' Beliefs About Domestic Abuse Allegations, and Child Custody Outcomes in Cases Involving Parental Alienation and Abuse Allegations. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russom, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, hereby proclaim November 2022 as Family Court Month and urge all our citizens to support their local community's efforts to prevent the harm of children in the hands of family members and to honor and value the lives of children. And Tracy, do you want to say a few words?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mayor Russom, City Council. Thank you so much for proclaiming that November is Family Court Awareness Month. I come to you today as a teacher, a child safety advocate. I also come to you as a survivor of intimate partner violence, post-separation abuse, and as a protective parent. As you already spoke about, the primary focus of this year's Family Court Awareness Month is education. Child protection is often viewed as the job of social services, but family courts are ruling on cases with child abuse concerns every day. Most would be shocked to know that in many states, the family court judges who make rulings that impact children's lives have little to no mandated training hours in childhood trauma, childhood abuse, coercive control, and domestic violence. One in 15 children are victims of child abuse, usually by a family member or parent. And abusive parents are more likely to seek sole custody than nonviolent ones, and they are unfortunately successful about 70% of the time. Domestic violence is about power and control. The desire to maintain power and control doesn't mysteriously vanish when the relationship ends, and the family court system becomes a new and highly effective platform for abusers. And those abusers know how to manipulate untrained judges. Our primary goal this year is to shine a spotlight on the need for mandated training for judges and family court professionals who are ruling on cases with child safety and domestic violence concerns every day. Our children's lives are literally dependent on the courts becoming educated on these issues. This proclamation means the world not only to me, but to all the other parents here in Arroyo Grande who have family court cases ongoing. Lastly, I'd like to invite those in attendance to learn more about our efforts, our critical conversation series is taking place throughout the month of November. It's available online, and there'll be several sessions in November that the public can access. Thank you very much again.
Thank you very much. Let's see if anyone would like to speak on item 6B, so I'll go ahead and open up public comment. Would anyone like to come forward on this item? And seeing no one, let's check online.
If any member of the public in Zoom would like to speak on this item, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. I should have asked anything.
There are no written comments.
Thank you. So we'll close item 6B and move on to item 6C. This is honorary proclamation recognizing November 2022, also as National Adoption Month, and we have Owen Martin from Child Welfare Services here. This is an honorary proclamation recognizing November 2022 as National Adoption Month. Whereas the City of Arroyo Grande recognizes the importance of providing children safe, healthy, and loving homes in which they may become a permanent part of a family through adoption, and whereas there are more than 120,000 children in the United States adopted annually, and whereas more than 5,500 children in California are adopted annually, and whereas 33 children in San Luis Obispo County will be adopted by the end of this year, and whereas to help these children have permanent, loving families and to support the families that provide these homes, the County of San Luis Obispo Department of Social Services is acknowledging National Adoption Month to raise awareness about the need for adoptive homes for local children and join other organizations to celebrate adoptive families in our community. And whereas this effort, along with similar celebrations in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, will offer children the chance to live with loving, healthy, permanent families when they cannot live with their birth families and encourage other dedicated individuals to make a powerful difference in the lives of a child through adoption. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russom, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, do hereby proclaim November as National Adoption Month, and in so doing, urge all citizens of Arroyo Grande to join in a national effort to raise awareness about the importance of adoption. We'd love to...
Thank you for having me today. So my name is Owen Martin. I'm a child welfare adoption social worker with the county. And at any given time, the County of San Luis Obispo Child Welfare Division has nearly 260 children, youth, and teens in the foster care system. These children are in care through no fault of their own and are often the victims of abuse, neglect, mental illness, and abandonment. These youth yearn for the same things that other youth want: a safe, stable, and loving forever home and a family to care for them. We sincerely appreciate the support of Mayor Karen Ray Russom and the entire City Council for helping us honor the tireless and noble work that our adoptive and resource families do for our youth. We are very happy to announce that this year, like the mayor noted, our county will have finalized 33 adoptions, and two of those families are from this community. We would also like this opportunity to shed light on a growing concern within our community. The effects of the COVID-19 pandemic have continued to present many challenges for our recruitment strategies and has had a significant impact on our ability to recruit and maintain new homes. While we have around 260 youth currently in care, 24 of which are from your district, we have only been able to place 11 of those youth in their community of origin. This means over 50% of youth entering care from Arroyo Grande will need to be placed in a foreign community, which can often lead to education disruption and further trauma. With only around 120 active resource families to care for our youth, a significant number of homes are currently active but have age preferences of 0 to 5 years old. Our two most pressing needs are for homes willing to provide short-term care as an emergency shelter homes, or homes willing to care for school ages 6 through 18, especially teenagers. When faced with a shortage of this magnitude, it truly hinders the department's capacity to pair youth with the ideal family, and many times we must simply place youth wherever there is an available space. Scrambling around for a safe, loving environment for our youth during an already traumatic time adds another layer of stress and trauma to this vulnerable population. This in turn creates further difficulties and delays in providing stability and permanency to the youth that we serve. It is for this reason we would like to encourage anyone interested in supporting our youth in care to please visit our website, www.slowfostercare.com, to learn about the different ways they can make a difference in the life of a youth in care. There are many different ways to serve, and we know that by working with other caring, collaborative partners like the City of Arroyo Grande, we can find more homes for the local youth in need. Thank you for this time.
Thank you so much. Let's go ahead and open up public comment and see if anyone would like to comment on item 6C, National Adoption Month. And seeing no one, we'll check online.
If any member of the public in Zoom would like to speak on this, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. And any written correspondence?
There are none.
All right. So we'll close public comment. We'll move to our final honorary proclamation recognizing November 14th through 20th, 2022 as National Apprenticeship Week. And we have Diana Marin from the Workforce Development Board.
Thank you for coming.
This is an honorary proclamation recognizing November 14th through 20th, 2022 as National Apprenticeship Week. Whereas the Workforce Development Board of San Luis Obispo County, the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, and construction trades unions in San Luis Obispo County, including the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 639, and Pipe Trades UA Local 403, have partnered to expand apprenticeship opportunities and head of household jobs in the construction trades in San Luis Obispo County. And whereas the advancement and well-being of the City of Arroyo Grande, San Luis Obispo County, State of California, and the United States of America depends on the continued development of a skilled and trained workforce in the building and construction trades. And whereas an ever-growing number of job creators and career seekers are discovering the benefits of apprenticeship's unique learn-while-you-earn model. And whereas the City of Arroyo Grande recognizes that robust apprenticeship programs provide tangible value to both job creators and apprentices, with the potential to increase productivity, improve diversity and inclusion, and reduce recruitment and training costs while providing a pathway to prosperous careers for job seekers. And whereas National Apprenticeship Week is celebrating its 8th anniversary of raising awareness of this vital role that apprenticeships provide in creating a qualified and highly skilled workforce in the building and construction trades across the nation and in the city of Arroyo Grande and the county of San Luis Obispo. Therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russell, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, do hereby recognize National Apprenticeship Week from November 14th through 20th, 2022. And we'd love to have you speak.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council Members. I'm here today on behalf of the Workforce Development Board. My name is Diane Marin, and I just want to emphasize how strongly we advocate and support local apprenticeships. There are several models within our county. Most of the renowned models are the construction trades models, but there are also various non-traditional models locally, such as those run by our partners through Slow Partners. How redundant, but yes, that's what they're called. Anyhow, there are several benefits to the apprenticeship models, which include reduced rates of turnover. It also increases employer morale, employer and employee morale. There is also the benefit of having a more inclusive and diverse workforce. In a high cost of living area like ours, it's hard for individuals to leave the workforce, go and get the education or training that they need in order to get a better paying job. So the earn and learn model that comes with apprenticeship really is the ideal model for being able to upskill while still being employed. I'd like to also highlight the fact that this is a benefit to employers because employers can get the skilled talent that they need by designing specific apprenticeship programs that will meet their either on specific occupation or industry needs. And that's what we found with the programs such as those offered through Slow Partners. They actually went to employers and developed their and modeled their programs based on what the employers were seeking. And so I would like to invite all of you and those of you in the public to an event that's coming up on Friday, November 18th at the IBEW Union Hall located at 6363 Edna Road in San Luis Obispo. Our partners in the construction trades are going to be gathering there to put on live construction trade demonstrations. And they will also be having current apprentices speak to their experience in the different crafts. So you're all invited to join us. They will be providing lunch. So we look forward to seeing you there on Friday the 18th. Oh, and the hours are noon to 3.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's see if anyone would like to comment on item 6D. And seeing no one here, let's check online.
If any member of the public would like to speak on this, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. And any written correspondence?
There are none.
All right. So we'll close item 6D. And thank you, everyone, for coming for the honorary proclamations. I want to also remind the public that this council invested with Slow Partners and used some of our federal monies from COVID to help put people through those programs. So we've been supportive of that in the past. Item 6E is an update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts. City Manager McDonald.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Just a couple of things to note related to COVID. One, again, there is a vaccine clinic, a free clinic being held by the county at their public health facility in Grover Beach on October 23rd from 3 to 6:30 p.m. That location is at 286 South 16th Street. They are offering COVID vaccines, boosters, and flu shots. So if anybody is interested in receiving those, they will be available there. They also announced recently that the updated boosters that were tailored to the Omicron variant will be available in our county for the 5 to 11 age range, as well as above that. They didn't provide a specific date, but those shipments should be reaching us, I believe, in the coming weeks. So just wanted to make that announcement. And then the other item is, I'm sure others have probably seen that the governor announced an intent intent to rescind the emergency declaration in February of next year. I believe the intent is to help make sure we get through this winter holiday season. And at that point, then the statewide declaration would be going away. And we have continued to declare our local emergency in order to help facilitate our ability to have remote meetings, largely if somebody is ill, not needing to post their location and have them make their homes available to the public to come in if they are sick, either with COVID or something else. So we will be transitioning as well. There are some new Brown Act rules coming into place, not just related to COVID, but other things that we will be transitioning to at the beginning of the year. So just wanted to acknowledge that we see that coming, and there will be some shifts to the way that that appears on our agenda. We would bring that forward for termination of that emergency, certainly by that point. So I just wanted to let everybody know we have that on our horizon. So that's it for COVID.
Let's check in with the council and see if anybody has questions.
I just have one.
Yeah.
Will we get cake the day that we cancel the termination of the emergency?
Sure. I think that's something, a COVID cake, but see, it's a non-COVID.
Non-COVID cake.
Yes. Right.
Thank you. Only question.
Good idea.
Yeah,
I like it. We can envision it. It is something to celebrate, that's for sure.
Let's see if the public has any questions or comments regarding item 6E, the COVID-19 efforts. Okay, seeing no one live, let's check out online.
If any member of the public on Zoom would like to speak, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. Any written correspondence?
There are none.
All right. So let's move forward to City Manager Communications.
Thank you. I have a number of items to just update people on and report out a number of events. I'm going to kind of go in chronological order here for everybody. First, I wanted to remind everyone that our annual Halloween Carnival and Haunted Maze is coming up at Elm Street Park on Saturday, October 29th, between 4:30 and 9:30 p.m. So I look forward to seeing people come out and enjoy that annual activity that our Recreation Services Department is putting on, and with lots of help from volunteers in the community. Thanks to everybody for participating in that. Also wanted to note that we will be having Halloween in the Village. Just to remind everyone, Halloween in the Village will be occurring this year. Branch Street will be closed between the hours of 2 and 6. I believe the intent is for trick-or-treating and activities to occur between 3 and 5 p.m. So we will be reminding everybody of that as we get a little closer as well. We also, up on the screen, we will be having a ribbon-cutting ceremony to officially open the Kiwanis Inclusive Playground, or at least assuming our consent calendar is approved, that is the intended name for that new playground to honor the partnership that the Arroyo Grande Kiwanis Club has provided in bringing forward that playground. So the public is all invited to attend. It begins at 4 p.m., and that's on November 4th at the playground. So really looking forward to opening that up and seeing all the kids out there playing on the new equipment. We're in the final stages of that project. The pour in place is occurring now, or was poured today. So that's the kind of spongy, nice surface that gets poured in place, and it helps keep kids safe on the equipment. So that's that item. I also wanted to remind everybody, November 8th is not only, it would be ordinarily a city council meeting day, but we have canceled that meeting in honor of trying to encourage everybody to get out and vote. So that is election day. Hopefully everybody partakes in that process. We do have our sales tax measure on the ballot, Measure D 22. And we're looking forward to hearing back from the public on that. Any questions that anybody has about that measure, staff is all here to answer them. There is information available at measured22.org. That will send you to a page on the city's website that has frequently asked questions and information available for people on what that measure means and how the revenue is anticipated to be spent. And then a little preview on our November 22nd meeting. We will be bringing forward our building code update, as well as an update to our 2022 streets program and the value engineering that we had talked about doing for some of our residential streets. Our holiday parade is scheduled for December 4th at 5 p.m. The city will be essentially putting that parade together and putting it on, sponsoring it and holding it this year. So we're looking forward to continuing that tradition in the community. And then finally, I'd like to hand things over to our assistant city manager and public works director to let everybody know a little bit about what's going on Halcyon. So we are in the middle of, or have just started a construction project to do some work on our sidewalks and crosswalks in that area. And so just wanted to remind everybody what that project entails.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. I think we have some exciting projects going on Halcyon. They are a little bit of traffic calming, sidewalk repair, safe routes to school is the main overarching goal here, but there's also some curb ramps as well for ADA compliance. So you can see them up on the screen. They're just general localized areas. And we do get some questions from the community. This is a very heavily trafficked street, and we just want to let people know kind of what's going on generally. So on the east side of Halcyon and Willow, the concrete's going to be poured this week. I can give you some details of each project if you'd like, but your council looked at this back in June and approved the pedestrian crossings improvements project back then. But we just want to give you some time frames and allow the public to be informed. So again, on east side of Halcyon and Sandalwood, that started the pouring at the end of the week. We're starting the pouring at the end of the week. Next week, beginning October 31st, we'll work to begin the west side of Halcyon and Sandalwood and complete two wheelchair ramps there. And then during the week of Thanksgiving, we're going to be working on the intersection of Farrell and Halcyon, doing some sidewalk gap closures and things like that. And then if you go up to the top of the screen, the last phase in early December, we're going to do some curb ramps, striping, et cetera, at East Grand and Alder. So there's going to be a new look at all these crosswalks. It's going to look restriped, and it's going to look great. So, yes, thank you.
That'll definitely
do it. I can answer any questions you have at this point.
Is that the...
Thank you. Yes, we just wanted to make sure everybody was aware if anyone lives in that area or is driving by and wondering what's going on there. We wanted to remind everybody what that project entails. And our construction company has done a lot of outreach and provided notices to the people who are directly affected. But we also wanted to let everybody know if you're curious what the intent is there.
So I see it now.
Thank you. All right, let's see if the council has any questions for the city managers. Okay, let's open it up to public comment. Does anybody have comment on item 6F? This is city manager communications. And seeing no one here, let's check in online.
Any member of the public would like to speak on this, please raise your hand.
That's extra. The stripping is extra.
Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. Any written correspondence received?
There are none.
Forgive me. Item 7. Sorry, a very unfortunate typo.
We must.
Thank you for highlighting that.
Let's go to community comments and suggestions. So sorry. Community comments. The more I try not to laugh, the more I'm laughing. It's not even that funny. Okay. This is the community's opportunity to come forward and talk to us about items that are not on tonight's agenda. So if you would like to come forward and speak to the council here, please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less and address the council as one body. So I go ahead, if you'd like to come up, come on up to the dais.
It's nice to know you're all human like the rest of us. One word for tonight is gratitude. So much about children and just things. It's interesting just how things mesh together. So, thank you. I'll have to talk fast now. Hello, I'm Jamie Samba-Matsu. I'm here representing We Are the Care once again. Well, it's been a few months since we've last given comment. Much has happened behind the scenes. We Are the Care are among many partners to continue our fight against the child care crisis. Tonight, I'd like to share some of our updates and reinvigorate your support in our movement to bestow some hope and inspiration. Since its start in 2019, We Are the Care has grown and adapted based upon the needs of different communities, whether it was changing or creating new task force, the inclusion of different sectors and partners. But We Are the Care has always lived administratively in the first five San Luis Obispo County. We are excited to announce that in the next few months, We Are the Care is transitioning over to the San Luis Obispo Child Care Planning Council as their house. This change offers new opportunities and resources for the initiative to continue work and to find solutions to alleviate the child care crisis, to continue to support children, families, and providers in our county. We cannot wait to see what joining the forces will bring to We Are the Care in the coming months. Other updates of We Are the Care include the upcoming family-friendly workplace workshop hosted by the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce. This event has been planned and was successful with the San Luis Obispo Chamber workshop that took place this past summer. The Atascadero event will offer employers and HR professionals information regarding family-friendly workplace practices and ways to implement change by connecting them directly with other local business leaders who have adopted such practices. The workshop will take place on Tuesday, November 15th at the Spring Hill Suites in Atascadero Reach. Reach out to the Atascadero Chamber for registration information. Finally, we wanted to report that We Are the Care recently attended a countywide city managers meeting on Friday, October 21st, to present and discuss roles of local government and what can be done to play a part in addressing the child care capacity in our communities. There, we shared some specific ways cities can take action to support our essential child care sectors, families, and our community. You can talk with your city manager if you have any follow-up questions. Personally, I want to thank you from We Are the Care, the Planning Council, being a provider, for listening and for becoming a part actively in supporting your families and your community and the roles that we have and the roles that we see in the bigger picture and meeting needs of businesses, families, and also our community and our economy. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening, council members. I've never known to need a microphone, so I'll try to keep my voice down so I don't shout in here. My name's Joe Martinez. I'm with the American Legion and the coordinator for Wreaths Across America for the Arroyo Grande Cemetery. Every year for the past 5 years, the American Legion has raised money to purchase and place wreaths on veterans' graves at the Arroyo Grande Cemetery. There are approximately 2,200 veterans at the Arroyo Grande Cemetery, at this cemetery. We're very close to reaching our goal this year of getting a wreath on every grave. We've only reached this goal once in the last 5 years, so we tend to do sections at a time. But we're close to getting one for every veteran this year. The event is open to the community to help lay the wreaths. We encourage families and especially young children to come out to honor our deceased veterans. and the sacrifices they've made for us. Children especially need to learn that the freedoms they enjoy is because of the sacrifices made by our veterans. The mission of Wreaths Across America is to teach, honor, and remember. Teach the community and children the role veterans play in their freedom. Honor our veterans by recognizing them and placing a wreath on the veteran's grave and rendering a hand salute or a hand over the heart. And remember our veterans by saying the name of the deceased veteran to ensure they will never be forgotten. We encourage young children to come because if we don't teach our young ones to honor our veterans, they'll forget. Our veterans will be forgotten. And as they place the wreath on there, they place their hand on their heart, and they say that veteran's name, that veteran will never be forgotten as long as we keep saying their name. The event will take place at the Arroyo Grande Cemetery on December 17th at noon. I invite you all to come out and help us on that day and help us place wreaths. I would also like to ask for your financial support. It is the Arroyo Grande Cemetery that we're doing this for. So I feel it is appropriate to come and ask for some fundings. We're very close. So I am asking for a $500 donation or an amount that you might feel adequate to help us reach our goal. The donations can be made to the Arroyo Grande American Legion Post 136, which is a nonprofit organization. I do have some flyers, if you would permit me to hand each of you a flyer.
If you would give them to the city clerk and she'll record those and get those out to us. Do you also have a website where that can be done electronically?
Yes, and that's on this flyer. It is Wreaths Across America /CA.6. Let me read it to you. Wreathsacrossamerica.org /CA.0646, and that goes directly to the Arroyo Grande Cemetery. So if anybody wants to make donations directly to the website, there was something else I was going to say about that one. Anyway, that is the website for Wreaths Across America, and we just like to I thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come forward for public comment on items not on tonight's agenda? Seeing no one in-house, let's check online.
If any member of the public would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. Any written correspondence received?
There are none.
Thank you. So at this time, let's close public comment. This is closing item 7 and moving on to our consent agenda. This is collectively items 8A through 8J this evening. Let's check in with the council and see if anyone would like to pull one for commentary or questions or separate consideration. I just had a quick one on. Oh, excuse me. Oh,
just 8J for comment, please.
8J. Okay. And for me, it's 8E. So let's start with 8E then. I just wanted to ask, you're probably already planning this, Jessica, but this is the consideration of the resolution approving the updated city council handbook, and we haven't updated this in a while. And so presuming that this gets updated tonight, can we get that out to all people who are running for office this time around, since that will be something that's important for every candidate to know what's in there?
Yes, so what will happen, we will get it up on the website, and then I'll share a link with the current candidate, so it'll be available for the public to see, too.
Perfect. And item 8J, Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you. It's just a quick one. It's the monthly water supply and demand update, and I just wanted to thank the residents for continuing to conserve. So for September 2022, we had an 18% reduction in water use. So I just wanted to acknowledge that and to thank the residents for it. Thank you.
Excellent. And following up on the monthly water supply and demand update, when we do council report outs a little bit later, there will be some discussion about water. So stay tuned if you are interested in this topic. So let's go ahead and open up public comment. So if anyone would like to come forward and talk about items 8A through 8J inclusive, come on up. And seeing no one in-house, let's check on online.
Any member of the public on Zoom would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. And any written correspondence?
There are none.
Okay, so let's bring this back around to the council for discussion and or action.
Madam Mayor, I would move for approval of items 8A through 8J.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please? Oh, wait, do we have an ordinance on here tonight?
No, it's a discussion item.
Okay,
it's a
public hearing. Thank you. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Barnett?
Yes.
Councilmember Snorton?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes.
Mayor Bay Russum?
Yes. And before we move to item 9, please forgive us for our giggles, and especially us being me, myself, and I. If any of you have ever seen the movie The Candidate with Robert Redford, when he gets the giggles, oh my gosh, it's the best. That movie has stood the test of time. Minus the technology. All right, so this brings us to item 9, public hearings. This is discussion and consideration of introduction of an ordinance amending Title 16 of the Oro Grande Municipal Code regarding tiny homes on wheels and Development Code Amendment 22-004. A note about process here. I have a conflict, as do three other council members, so four of us do. So myself and Councilor Barnage will be recusing ourselves as we have in the past. But again, a note just about process of what this means. Because four of us has conflicts, but we need at least three to make a decision, we've asked the FPPC for guidance on this. And as expected, the FPPC's response is that we drew straws. And the first time we heard this, we drew straws, and myself and Councilmember Barnage are recused. The ones who have conflicts but can vote are Councilmembers Storton and Mayor Pro Tem. So they'll sit and hear the item. We will excuse ourselves until that's over, and I will announce my conflict because I have an APU, and so that is some... I don't quite get why it is, but it is. Councilor Barnage, do you want to state your conflict as well?
Yes, I have done design work for Mayor Pro Tem George, who has an ADU, and so I'm stepping down.
All right, so Mayor Pro Tem, I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. We'll just give the mayor and Councilmember Barnage a few minutes to gather their things. Okay, very well. So I guess we'll move on with the staff report from Planning Manager Perez.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, members of council. I'm Andrew Perez, the city's planning manager, and tonight I'll be introducing the city's ordinance with regard to tiny homes on wheels. So as a bit of background to get the presentation started, on February 8th of this year, staff introduced amendments to the city's ADU ordinance. Included in that ordinance were provisions for tiny homes on wheels to be permitted as a type of ADU. At that meeting, council considered the provisions and ultimately decided and directed staff to extract those provisions for tiny homes from the ADU ordinance and return with a separate ordinance and a study session to discuss that draft ordinance. So on September 13th, staff presented a draft ordinance for tiny homes to council for purposes of a study session. Really, the primary change in the ordinance between February and September is that a tiny home is no longer considered a type of ADU, but rather an accessory use on a single-family property. So at that meeting, council was supportive of the draft ordinance and directed staff to make two changes to the ordinance before proceeding in the process. The first being adding language that would allow additional agencies to certify a tiny home as habitable if that organization is approved by HCD, the State Department of Housing and Community Development. And then the second direction was to include a prohibition of rooftop decks on tiny homes. So subsequent to the study session, staff presented the draft ordinance to Planning Commission on October 4th for a recommendation hearing. The Planning Commission was supportive of the ordinance as proposed and recommends adoption by the council with no further changes. So there is no standard statewide definition of a tiny home. So our ordinance, the city's ordinance, defines a tiny home as a structure built on a chassis and intended for separate, temporary, independent living quarters for one household meets the following five conditions. It must be a self-contained unit that includes facilities to support daily living routines, such as cooking, sleeping, sanitation. The unit must be licensed and registered with the DMV. It must be towable and cannot move under its own power. The unit must have a minimum size of 100 square feet and maybe no larger than 400 square feet. And finally, the unit shall comply with the standards of the appropriate code regulations as determined by the building official. And that's really based on the type of unit or structure that is being proposed as the tiny home. So there are two specific structures that are identified in the ordinance as allowed to be used as tiny homes. The first being a park trailer, which is defined by the state's health and safety code. It's a unit that's built on a chassis with wheels and is in compliance with the Recreational Vehicle Industry Association standards for safety and habitation. The second type of structure allowed as a tiny home is a manufactured home, which is defined by the state health and safety code also. Like a park trailer, it's also built on a permanent chassis, but instead of being built to the RVIA standards, it is built to federal housing and urban development department standards. The ordinance also speaks to types of structures or vehicles that are not allowed as tiny homes. Back in February, in the discussion with council, part of the direction was to ensure that tiny homes have a resemblance of a traditional home. So for that reason, motorhomes, travel trailers, fifth wheels, and those type of vehicles are prohibited to be used as tiny homes. And additionally, camping cabins, although having the appearance and resemblance of a traditional home, those units are not intended to have plumbing and are intended to be used within an RV park. So they cannot support daily living activities without plumbing, so thus not allowed as a tiny home. So as I touched on earlier, a tiny home is allowed as an accessory use on any lot with an existing single-family dwelling. However, properties with a permanent ADU would not be eligible to add a tiny home. The ordinance also states that a tiny home is not eligible for use as a short-term rental. The ordinance includes standards for placement and location on a property. So a tiny home must be located behind the existing dwelling and be set back at least 4 feet from rear and interior property lines, except when located on a corner property in which there is a 10-foot setback from that street side property line. On the property, the tiny home must be parked on a paved pad with curbs or a similar barrier to prevent movement of the tiny home once it's been installed. And no additional parking is required on the property once a tiny home is installed. The ordinance requires a tiny home to connect to city water and sewer utilities. The tiny home can connect to existing connections, so existing sewer and water laterals, without new meters that serve the existing primary dwelling, and there'd be no fee for that connection. However, the property owner will see an increase on their bi-monthly utility bill. It's a flat rate that is imposed for a second unit on a property. However, a property owner does definitely have the option to install new meters, and if that is the case, the full connection fees will be assessed on that permit. A tiny home may be off-grid for electrical and natural gas services. However, in the permitting process, it must demonstrate that the unit does meet energy code requirements for heating, ventilation, and energy efficiency, as required by Title 24 of the Building Code. And then again, as I mentioned, tiny homes are required to resemble the general appearance of a traditional home. To do so, the ordinance requires that a tiny home have windows of double pane glass and exterior trim. Any mechanical equipment should be incorporated into the unit and may not be located on the roof. Attached patios and decks are allowed at an area up to equal that of the tiny home. The undercarriage, such as the chassis, wheels, hitch, et cetera, must be hidden from view by the use of skirting or landscaping. And then finally, a tiny home would be limited to one story or 16 feet, whichever happens to be less. So that kind of concludes my summary of the ordinance, and just wanted to bring it to council's attention that adoption of an ordinance for tiny homes will be categorically exempt pursuant to section 15303 and 15305 of the CEQA guidelines regarding projects consisting of new construction or conversion of small structures and minor alterations in land use limitations. And also that tonight's meeting was the public was notified of tonight's meeting in accordance with the government code. And that concludes my presentation, but I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that very, very nice staff report. Do we have any questions for staff, Councilmember Paulding?
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. I actually don't have questions as they were answered at our prior meeting, so appreciate the staff report.
Wonderful. Councilmember Storton?
The same. We've reviewed this a number of times, so thank you.
Thank you, and I don't have any questions either, so I will open up to public comment. Does anyone wish to speak on this item?
Sure.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me again. My name is Joe Pullen, owner and president of Central Coast Tiny Homes. We manufacture tiny homes here on the Central Coast. And I just wanted to thank Andrew and staff and everyone for taking my input into account. I think I'll help get more permitted. Some of you have probably checked with other cities as much as people have talked about tiny homes. There actually have not been a lot of permits pulled, but the more people become aware of it and that you've made it hopefully relatively simple and consistent with the rules that all of our manufacturers do, hopefully it will start to grow. So again, appreciate your efforts, and thank you very much.
Thank you. AGP, is there anyone online?
If any member of the public would like to speak on this, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor Pro Tem, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. And City Clerk Mattson, do we have any written correspondence?
There are none.
Okay, wonderful. So then I'll take it back to council for deliberation and maybe a motion.
Want to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
I have no deliberation, but I'm prepared to make a motion.
Well, I'll just make a comment.
Perfect.
Thanks to staff for making the adjustments there on the approving authority from a code standpoint, and to Mr. Pullen for his kind of weighing in on that discussion and making sure that our ordinance doesn't preclude anybody, especially our local builders. And then my final comment is this is just a great step, I think, for our city to help provide affordable housing. I lied, one more comment after that. If it's possible that we might, post something on our social media about this or put it on our website just to help advertise the program, I think that would be great. I don't know if that's a question for our city clerk, but I think you're hearing that, so.
Sure. Once the ordinance is adopted, then we can share that information.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. I don't have any comments other than I'm looking forward to moving forward with this.
Just a quick comment to our community development department. Just the not only getting this done, but the significant work that's been done in other areas of providing housing in our area. This is, I think, the conclusion of several that we've tackled over the course of some time. I know there's going to be other stuff, but have really done a good job and just appreciate it. So with that said, I'll make a motion to move an ordinance of the City Council adopting amendments to Title 16 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code regarding tiny homes on wheels.
I'll second that motion.
And it is an ordinance. It is an ordinance, so our city attorney will read it.
regarding tiny homes on wheels. Location is citywide. And just to clarify, this is an introduction. Thank you.
Thank you for that. So we have a motion and a second. We get a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes. And that concludes item 9A, and we can invite the mayor and Councilmember Barnage back.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. So this takes us to item 11. This is new business. Item 11A is discussion and consideration of updates to the Aurora Grande Community Service Grant Program. And Director Pedrotti.
Thank you, Brian Pedrotti, Community Development Director. And thank you. Yes, it's a discussion of our Community Service Grant Program. And I'll pass it over to our planning manager, Andrew Perez, for a presentation.
Thank you, Brian. So as Brian mentioned, I'll be a presentation to provide some background about the program and some staff recommendation for updates to the program to really maximize its effectiveness for this year and beyond. So the Community Service Grant Program was established in 2014 as an alternative funding source for our local community service organizations that had been traditionally funded through the Community Development Block Grant Program. Around that time in 2014, staff and council recognized that the CDBG process was kind of overly burdensome and complicated for some of our small local nonprofits. So in response, created that community service grant program. And every year since 2014, a minimum of $20,000 has been budgeted to support the program and our local nonprofits. So typically each fall, the city will announced the opening of the application period, during which eligible organizations can submit an application requesting a portion of the grant funding for that year. At the conclusion of the application window, applications are reviewed by the Community Service Grant Committee, and it's at a public meeting where the committee kind of discusses the merits of each application and ultimately develops funding recommendations that are forwarded to council. The recommendations are considered, and ultimately the final allocations are approved by council at one of its meetings. So looking at the committee specifically, it was established to ensure impartial, objective review of all grant applications. In 2015, that first year of the program, the council adopted Resolution 4650 to establish a committee that consisted of one member from each of the city's advisory bodies at that time. So the committee remained with that composition until 2018, when the Historic Resources Committee, the Parks and Recreation Commission, and Traffic Commission were disbanded. In response to that action, council changed the composition of the committee to consist of one member from each of the Architectural Review Committee, Planning Commission, Downtown Parking Advisory Board, Arroyo Grande Tourism Business Improvement District, and finally one member from the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. So we are here tonight to discuss potential changes to the program because when awards for the fiscal year 2021 and 2022 grant program were finalized, there was discussion and council ultimately directed staff to return with an item to address concerns that the committee composition was too skewed towards the business community. So in response, staff has gathered five potential changes and recommendations that I'll present in the following slides. And you know, committee or council have the opportunity to discuss each of those, pick and choose as it sees fit, or kind of go beyond those five to refine the process and program to maximize its effectiveness. The first option is in response to council feedback. So council specifically directed staff to consider how to incorporate two representatives from the community at large. So to do this, council will need to establish criteria that would ensure that a qualified, impartial committee is appointed. And additionally, appointments, or council will need to determine whether the appointments would be made annually or longer, perhaps running with the appointees or council members' term. One drawback is it could be problematic if there are no applicants for the committee, or if there are too many qualified applicants and council may struggle to narrow down to a representative or two from the community. Another option provided for council's consideration is council-appointed membership for the committee. In this scenario, each committee, each council member would appoint a member to the committee. One benefit is that this would use the same established process that council already uses to appoint members to the advisory bodies. One decision would need to be made whether the appointments would be coterminous with the appointee member's term or on an annual basis. The third option provided by staff is to solicit representatives from our local nonprofit organizations, specifically those that share the values that the council established when it adopted Resolution 5142 to establish the city's diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice policy. One drawback here is the organizations that would fit that criteria are typically eligible for grant funding themselves. So bringing in representatives from those organizations may create potential issues with regards to conflicts of interest and difficulty maintaining a quorum when reviewing the applications. Another option is a reduction of membership in the committee. So currently there are five committee members that make up the grant panel committee. Council may reduce the number to alleviate concerns regarding skewed representation towards the business community. However, one drawback of this option is that a committee of less than five members, although it may balance the perspective, it may also provide less diversity and less perspective than a five-member panel. So, and there also is risk of not having a quorum in the event of absences of the committee members when reviewing the applications. The final option presented by staff is a bit of a two-pronged approach. It could consist of amending either the application or the ranking criteria for the applications. So currently, a complete application consists of an organization confirming their eligibility for the program, a description of the services to be provided, and how that money will be, how the grant monies will be used to carry out the services that are being proposed. So one option would be amending the application to require an applicant to include information about how their services or organization addresses council's goals and priorities. So the amendments to the application can be done on either an annual basis or as needed and determined by council. And looking at the ranking criteria, this was included as an attachment to the staff report, and the ranking matrix has remained unchanged since the inception of the grant program. So generally, points are awarded to an application for completeness of the application, the benefit to Arroyo Grande residents provided by the service, number of residents anticipated to be served, the history of providing community services by that organization, the financial need by the organization, as well as the ability to carry out the program objectives in a timely manner. So as I previously mentioned, staff recommends that council discuss the grant program and provide direction to staff regarding potential amendments to the grant program committee makeup, amendments to the application and or ranking criteria. And this could also include administrative amendments to the council handbook as appropriate. So again, that concludes my presentation and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Let's check in with council. Councilmember Barnage?
No questions, just comments.
Councilmember Starton?
No questions, just comments for discussion.
Councilmember Paulding?
Same here.
Mayor Pro Tem?
No questions, thank you.
All right, let's make that unanimous and open up public comments. See if anyone would like to come forward and speak on item 11A. Seeing no one here, let's check in online.
If any member of the public on Zoom would like to comment, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, we have no raised hands.
Thank you. Any written correspondence received? There are none. All right, so let's close public comment, bring this back around to council, and Councilmember Barnage, let's start with you.
Sure, thank you. Thank you for the staff report, Andrew. So I am very much in favor of, I'll call it choice B or number two for the council appointed membership. I appreciate staff bringing this forward and having all kinds of different options to choose from a menu. A lot of thought went into that, so I appreciate that. But after kind of reading through everything, I think that is the one that I'm most in favor of. I think that it falls in line with what we do for Planning Commission and ARC. So it's sort of just business as usual. We're used to that. As far as the appointments can be made each year prior to the time, since this is only maybe one meeting a year, I'm okay with just appointing one person for the whole term of the council member or the mayor's term, just because I feel like once we got done, we'd have to almost appoint someone so soon after that. And so I feel like it's for a council member, it's four meetings, and appoint someone for that. I think that would be a commitment that we could probably be able to solicit someone to volunteer for. So that would be my, I think that's the most fair way to do it and the easiest way for staff as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton?
Well, thank you for that, because I actually feel exactly the same way. So I appreciate that. I think it's a good representation of community members within the given districts. The only thing I was kind of struggling with, or as far as discussion, if we have four reps within the community that come from within those districts, I'm assuming that could be part of our discussion. Does that person have to come in with the district that the person represents, or just anybody citywide? So I think we'd have to discuss that. I like the idea of having a person who represents a general area assign somebody from the area that they're representing, just because you get a cross-section of various members of the community. That would give us four on that community, and then perhaps consider a chamber member to add the business in that makeup of five. And then if we wanted to expand it, the mayor could appoint one, and we could have somebody from the TBID, perhaps another business representative, and that would make the group seven. So it's just a matter of, should we have five or seven? I'm just throwing this out for more of a discussion of what could that look like. But I do like the idea of council members appointing. As far as the amended application process, I don't think I like the idea of council goals and priorities. I think there's a lot of unmet needs out there that we don't necessarily know about, and I think we should keep this as generic and open as possible for agencies in need to come forward and apply and go through the process. I think having that broad and open aspect of it creates inclusivity with more programs that are out there that might be in need, and I'd hate to micromanage it to council goals and priorities. So those are just some of my thoughts for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Councilmember Paulding?
Thank you, Mayor. I, too, agree that the council appointment approach is the wise approach to take here. And I would just, on the discussion of whether the appointment should be from the district or at large, I could see a potential issue finding somebody because the districts are smaller, and would just probably recommend to increase flexibility by making it an at-large appointment, but open to hear what my colleagues have to say. Those are my comments at this time.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you. I have pretty similar comments. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the TBID member. I would support council council member appointees to run the duration of the term. I would also, if we needed to go with seven, if we were concerned that five wouldn't be enough, then possibly have ARC and planning each appoint one. So technically there could be two people from the ARC. I'm not quite sure, but why would I say two? ARC, planning, and then five council member appointees, if we needed to get to seven, would be my recommendation. Otherwise, just five. I would say run the duration of the council term. I don't feel a need to amend the application, and I don't feel a need to amend the score sheet either. I feel like it's very easy to use, being a person who has sat on and used the score sheet. I thought it was very easy to use, uncomplicated, and got the work done. So I don't feel a need to modify that. And those are my comments.
Thank you. And before I start my comments, I just want to thank Mayor Pro Tem and Councilmember Barnich for bringing this forward and kind of modernizing or upgrading this process. It's been something that I think we're unique in doing this. So thank you for doing that. So I think that the elegant solution is the second one, which is the council-appointed membership. I think the thing that makes that elegant and why I would want that at five and not seven is that if each one of us is appointing someone, then it will be directly reflective of what the voters have asked for. So I wouldn't want to add a chamber member or add someone from planning or add somebody from ARC, because by definition, if we go with the five of us, if one of us chose to have a chamber member on there, then that would reflect the values of that person or the wishes of that person, which is by extension the reflection of what the voters want. So I think that's the Occam's razor answer, you know, which is just make it easy. I learned a new word tonight, coterminous, with our terms. Thank you. So I would agree with that. I would like some wording, maybe, or throw this out there, that the preference for council member, I mean, the mayor's one would be at large, but the preference would be that it could come from the district. It doesn't have to. And that way, to encourage diversity or something, we can make some statement so that, you know, it's just out there that, you know, hey, we'd like to have people from all over the community, but if you can't do that, then you can't do that. I had the same concern that it's hard enough getting people to run, much less finding other people to appoint. So that would be my thought, is to say that we had a preference, that the council member appointments, that there was a preference for by district but not required. And in terms of adding the council goals, I liked the idea at first, but then as I'm listening to everybody else, I'm fine with it just being open and generic and maybe responsive to what the nonprofits think is out there that we don't even know about yet. I hadn't looked at it that way. So that would be my comments.
Can I ask a follow-up question? With the appointments for Planning Commission and ARC with the districts going forward, I thought they didn't have to be in our district. Okay, so this would be different. Okay.
That's correct.
I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
No, I'm not saying they have to come from the district.
No, I know. I'm just making sure that I was the ARC and the PC, that hasn't changed. So if we said with this one, we would have a preference for the district so that there's diversity, but they don't have to. So I was just kind of looking if Planning Commission ARC had changed. That's all.
Okay. Well, I would look to that side of the table since y'all brought this forward, maybe if someone was ready to make a motion or further discussion.
I can make a motion once I make the motion. One moment, please. So I would... No, wrong one.
I know, that's why I was just... It's a lot of resolutions.
I know, there's a lot. I'll just go here. This is just recommended just to discuss it and provide direction. So we don't really
There's no resolution
We don't need to do anything else except to give you direction, which you already have, right?
It would help us, I think, to have a motion with that direction included. And if the direction includes adding the Community Service Grant Committee to the list of committees identified in the council handbook, so it's in section 5.2, under that section, it would be basically identifying that as a committee, just like the Planning Commission, Downtown Parking Advisory Board, and Architectural Review Committee. The appointment process, unless we add more language, would be the same process you would use for those other advisory boards. That's the way I would envision it. It would be like an extra bullet, but if there's a different direction provided as you have your discussion, then
Mayor Pro Tem, can I jump in here real quick? Because it just occurred to me, the other appointments require them to be residents of the city of Rio Grande. Is that something that we want to make sure is true for this as well? Okay. Just want to make sure, because that is delineated on the other ones mm-hmm. as well.
Then I would move that the city council give direction to staff to change the Community Service Grant Program Committee to 5 appointed city council members, 4 council members and a mayor, to run concurrent with their terms, preferably within their district, if possible, but not mandated. And they must be a resident of Arroyo Grande. And to also add the committee to section 5.2 for committee appointments.
Second. Okay, we have a motion, a second. Any discussion? All right, can we get a roll call, please? Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnett?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Babe Russom?
Yes. This moves us to item 12, City Council Reports. I'm really excited about the one I'm about to give. So JPIA has not met. TBID was yesterday, and I unfortunately got stuck in traffic on my way home from being out of state, so I missed it. So I don't know, Whitney, did you happen to make it to that meeting? Would you like to say a couple words?
Yes, I was able to attend that meeting, and there were a number of items on their agenda. Let me just make sure I pull it up and provide an update. One was receiving the quarterly financial report, which all things are looking good in terms of our TUT receipts, as well as the budget for this year. Apologies as I pull this up.
Would you like me to go forward with mine real quick, and then we'll...
The TBID board reviewed and approved an events policy, so that's to give direction to Verdin, and that as well as provide a recommendation to the city council for adoption in a policy to give some guidance to Verdin as the TBID's marketing agency, as well as the chamber, in making decisions about which events get essentially publicized and posted on the Visit Arroyo Grande calendar. So they did review that and make a recommendation for a policy that we will be bringing forward on November 22nd for the council to consider. There was a request to promote the Pismo Jazz Jubilee through the Visit Arroyo Grande platform that was approved as well. A request was submitted by Visit SloCal to participate in a co-op opportunity to engage in a resident sentiment survey that Visit SloCal is commissioning for the broader county and any cities that would like to participate to get feedback for their individual communities. The board did not approve moving forward with that with TBID funding. I think the concern was it's focused on reviewing resident sentiment as opposed to visitor sentiment, and it may not be directly related to increasing heads and beds in our city. And they received the quarterly report from Verdin Marketing, and that was the sum of the agenda.
Thank you. And the part that I'm excited to tell you about is the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. First of all, our schedule, our agendized
items were pretty common. We had our quarterly redundancy project update from our project manager, and that was great. But the interesting thing came from the district manager or district administrator's report. Basically, it's a, as you all know, a huge project, $27 million project. And there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of scheduling that happened. And what they decided to do was kind of schedule around some of the wet season issues that, given the weather we've had a chance to kind of move things around a little bit. And basically, they were able to move things around so that not only is the project coming in on time, on budget, but because of that rearrangement, it looks like it's going to fall actually earlier. So it should finish about 3 weeks earlier. It was slated to be finished in July. It is now planned to be finished in June. So it is ahead of schedule. And there is $2.8 million in contingency funds, and we have only had change orders in the amount of $169,000. So assuming that continues, we will be able to use that unused contingency fund to pay back debt service, which is ultimately going to help the ratepayers. So this has just been an extraordinarily well-managed project that is, you know, there's a lot of discussion about the CWA and that's effectiveness, and it has really proven to be something really outstanding. This is something that we're all going to be very proud of. And so that ribbon cutting should be in June, all things hopefully going well. And then the really cool thing is we had a, I don't know what all these parts are, I'm not an engineer, but a diffuser part that we needed to replace. And we went out to bid for that, and it came back at roughly $50,000. And the staff, it's a staff of 9 people, and the staff looked at that bid and said, "That's a stupid number." And I mean that. That's like legit what they said. And they said, "We're going to make this thing." And they used in-house parts, in-house equipment. They spent 3 days and they fabricated the part and saved the district $50,000. And on top of that, they designed it so that the part that was being ordered, they designed it so that if for whatever reason it needed to be pulled off and maintained, the old one could get put back on there as well. So we even got something better than we would have done if we had gone out to bid. So I have asked for the list of the people. There were 3 people that, I believe it was 3, worked on that for mayor's commendations. That is just straight up the kind of employees that we love to have and who just took the initiative and said, no, that's just, I mean, it's not their money. They didn't have to do that, but they did that for us ratepayers and saved us 5 figures. It's really just extraordinary. So I'm super, super proud of the workers that we have over there. And the mayor's meeting did happen, but I'm going to throw that to Mayor Pro Tem George, who attended that on my behalf. So Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. The Water Resource Advisory Committee, I'm going to punt that over to Councilmember Barnage because I was unavailable to attend that one. Visit SloCal Advisory meets on November 3rd, so looking forward to that meeting. And then the mayor's meeting, thank you for letting me go. It was a wonderful time. We were in Morro Bay, and it was beautiful and sunny, and all the yacht were out, and we were wondering if we needed to own a yacht to be part of the Morro Bay Yacht Club. So we thought maybe we could just own a kayak and then put a little sail on there and still be able to participate. Nonetheless, it was just nice to get everyone together and share some information. So the most important thing that was shared, the county made a presentation on the first phase of considering desal for our county, and they are looking for phase one for cities to come together and write a resolution in support of that movement. They're not asking for any financial contributions for phase one. It's just mainly the city's committing to wanting to learn more and also possibly some staff time to answer some questions and help with some scoping. So that's a pretty exciting, they said it's going to be like a 15 to 20 year process. The beauty is they have a, I don't have the sheet with me and I thought I had it, but they have a desal plant that just got approved that they're able to use as a model. That took 30 years. And now that it's been finally permitted, it'll be another 5 years. So that was a 35-year process. They're hoping to shave that down to 15 to 20 years. But, you know, we're always looking for water sustainability, and desal is something that everyone is asking for. So I would hope that when that comes forward to council, we would really have some good discussion regarding that. Other than that, there was just something fun. Mayor Martin in Paso, I know it's not city related, but I just wanted to share. They are working on a spaceport application. So for their airport, they're looking to, and they have an application in, they're working with Cal Poly to have a license for horizontal lift aircraft. So they're calling that Space Force. And they're also looking similar to the Wine Alliance. They really would like cities, all the cities, to come together and form a space alliance so that we can move forward. And so we'll be hearing from Paso in the near future regarding a partnership there for Space Tech Alliance. And then they have a 1 year, I know it's just Paso, but I have to share it. They have a 1 year pilot program. The UK has come in, and it is a high altitude parachuting program where they'll be at Fort Hunter Liggett, and they drop people and they practice. And I guess they like the terrain out here, so that's why they're doing it. So one of the council members, Charles from Atascadero, shared a story and a photo of the I guess last year they had come as well, and one of the parachuters, their parachute didn't deploy all the way, and so they went through the roof of a house in Atascadero and into their kitchen. So
holy.
They were alive. Everything was good, but they were very hesitant to share any information with first responders. So when the fire department came, they said they only gave first names, and they were very secretive as to why they were there. But, you know, it was all good. No one was hurt. And the neighbors actually had a key to go in because the people who lived there were on vacation. So he just thought that was funny, and I wanted to share that. If I could, I would have shared the picture, too. The CBRT, which is something that Mayor talks about all the time, that has gotten $15 million in support. So most likely that will be coming forward. It's California Ballot Roundtable is what the CBRT stands for. It'll be coming in the November 2024 ballot. That is that will be a concern for our city if our D22 measure passes, because it will be retroactive to anything that passes January 2022 and beyond. So if it does make it onto the ballot in 2024 and it does pass, our D22 measure will stop.
Okay, I need to ask a question about that, because last they told us it wasn't going retroactive, and it means it stops right away. So now that's been they backed that up. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what's scary. It'll stop, and then we'll have a year to try to get it back. So just something for everyone to be aware of. And so the league is really encouraging all of our communities to come together and really show a clear and consistent message that we don't think that this would be an appropriate thing to move forward. Supervisor Gibson gave a report, which I thought was very good, knowing the county has gone through with the homeless plan, and that's been very successful. He's moving forward and spearheading the behavioral health strategic plan, and that is pretty incredible, because right now mental health is a huge issue in our community, and it's kind of being addressed through homeless services, but it's actually not being addressed head on. A lot of the issues are in regards to how the hospitals respond and the hospital's responsibility, and if they are responsible or not responsible. So hopefully this strategic plan will be a private-public partnership, and he is working really hard on that. And if that does move forward, then he'll be able, or the county will be able, to successfully get more funding. And other than that, that was about it. So thank you.
I just wanted to add too, it was at my request that the desal got agendized on that, and it's something that back when I was supervisor, I was pushing for along with Supervisor Meacham. And at that time, they were telling us, oh, you're never going to get that done. It's going to take 15 or 20 years. And we just wanted to just smack ourselves in the forehead, because that was 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we could be that far down the road. So if only we knew someone
who might be headed there that could help
get that rolling, that would be fantastic. So, all right. I am looking at Councilmember Barnage.
Okay, this is going to be real short. Audit Committee has not met. Homeless Services Oversight Council, the Executive Committee met, but there really wasn't anything, sort of some cleanup, some new members, some cleanup of our bylaws, really nothing germane to the City of Arroyo Grande. Zone 3 Water Advisory Board, the last meeting was canceled. Next one's in November. And then I did attend the RAC remotely for Mayor Pro Tem George because I was sick. And there really wasn't anything that was important in regards to AG. So that's it.
Councilmember Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. And I do appreciate the discussion about DCEL. I think that's going to be a really tremendous opportunity for all of our communities to work together on. Going down the list here, the Air Pollution Control Board has not met. Neither has the Briscoe Halcyon Interchange Subcommittee. SLOCOG will not be meeting next week, but the Regional Transit Authority will. So I'll have a report at our following meeting on that. And then the REACH Slow Advisory Committee or Commission did meet. And myself and our city manager attended. The meeting went really well, and I'll just give a couple brief updates. It was pretty much a collaboration of all of the, two different networks, the commission, which is comprised of elected officials, and then the practitioners network, which are the city managers. So it was really neat to get everybody all together in one room. And one of the takeaways was, kind of talking about how the practitioners network can continue to engage with city councils. There are obviously economic development staff that are dedicated to regional economic development efforts as well as city economic development efforts. We don't have that opportunity at this stage, but it's something that the city could discuss in the future. Report outs about economic development at city council meetings was a discussion that could be it could be helpful for any city, and REACH, I think, is committed as a partner to help provide more information about what they're doing in that regard. And then the group agreed that an annual summit is a great way to galvanize regional interest in action. So those were some of the takeaways from the meeting, and I'm happy to answer any questions on REACH's efforts. Those are all my reports.
Okay, Councilmember Storton.
Thank you very much. Just a couple of things regarding the Five Cities Fire Authority. The chief gave a report at our last meeting discussing more of the process of the wind down, meeting with the city managers and kind of discussing things having to do with assets and liabilities of the JPA apparatus and capital equipment valuation, lease obligations and PERS liabilities. So that's all ongoing, continuing conversations about those items. He also provided us with a PowerPoint of service projections looking forward should Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande stay together, and what that may look like as far as service needs, staffing needs, and having those bigger discussions of what does a fire department authority look like moving forward as we get to the end of the year, the fiscal year. And we also reviewed our 22-23 budget and approved 7 budget adjustments. For IWMA, we approved a new board member packet for arriving new board members that will start in January. And for government affairs, their last meeting of the year will be on October 28th, which will also be my last meeting for Chamber Affairs. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Council communications. I got a couple of them, actually. Well, one was just reminding everybody about Election Day, like y'all don't know that. But so after the REACH meeting, I had I sat and had dinner with Mayors Moreno and Stewart, and we talked about that meeting. And one of the things that came out of that meeting was a recommendation from Mayor Moreno in Atascadero that with regard to the Economic Development Coordinator, and that they contract that out. They don't have an on-staff person. They have a contractor that does it. And she was just over the moon that the value that and not just in grant money but other things is so much greater than the cost of the contractor. I wanted to have a conversation about that as a council here. She was just so strongly recommended. It could even be the same one. Not necessarily, but the point is that we don't necessarily have to bring somebody on staff to do this. These are contractors that can do that on a part-time basis or on a contractual basis. So maybe before we had asked for an agendized thing, maybe just wanted to put that out there. Maybe I'll have a conversation with City Manager McDonald about that and kind of gauge what the possibilities are there. We've talked about economic development for a really long time, but the capacity to do it is really limited. And the chamber, when Jocelyn was here, was doing a bit of that. But I think having it just be on our behalf is something that I would really like to explore, the cost effectiveness, I don't know if that's a word, of possibly being able to contract that out. And again, coming with such a strong recommendation from a sister community, I think that would be worth taking a look at. If there are no other council communications?
Just to add to that really quickly, I think that's really good timing, especially as it relates to our general plan update, mm-hmm. because we have an economic development element. And so to have an expert engaged in that process would be really helpful. So.
Excellent. So maybe we can put that on our biweekly thing for next week. City Manager McDonald, are you okay with that? Help me remember it. Because I didn't remember it in our meeting last week, but thank you for the report out. That was what jogged my memory on that. So that takes us to items 14 and 15. We have no closed session, so adjournment, everyone. We will see you in a month. So we'll see you at the week of Thanksgiving, and hopefully everyone gets out to vote, and we hear from the people, and we'll see what the results are. Good night, everyone.